It's time again for weekly Reveille here on Sunsounds of Arizona. This is the June 19th edition of Weekly Reveille with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman, in Flagstaff, bringing you news from our military news websites, as well as the publications and websites of our veteran service organizations, and of course, the Veterans Administration. We're going to start off today with an item from the Military Times. LA unrest cancels more than 600 appointments at city's VA clinic. This is from the 13th of June by Leo Shane III. At least 600 patient appointments were canceled at the Los Angeles Ambulatory Care Center this week because of protests and violence in the city. And Veterans Affairs officials are asking local leaders to take steps to secure the area to prevent future care disruptions. In a letter to Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass, VA Secretary Doug Collins said appointments at the medical site were canceled for this entire week due to violent mobs rioting in support of illegal immigrants and against the rule of law. Officials also said the care center, which sits less than 3 miles from the city's convention center, was vandalized with messages opposing President Donald Trump and his immigration enforcement policies during the protests. Your city's failure to maintain law and order in Los Angeles is coming between veterans and the health care they have earned, Collins wrote. Last weekend, Trump ordered National Guard troops and active duty Marines to mobilize in support of law enforcement efforts responding to the protests sparked by immigration raids in the city. City officials have imposed a curfew for the last two events to quell unrest, but they have also pushed back on Trump's decision to employ military assets over the objections of state leaders, calling the moves an overreaction. Los Angeles police departments have said at least 160 people have been arrested since protests began on June the 6th, with the majority of that number coming last weekend. The immigration raids and federal response have now prompted additional protests in other cities nationwide. In letters to Bass and California Governor Gavin Newsom, Collins asked for plans to arrest and prosecute individuals involved in the VA clinic graffiti, as well as city funds to cover the cost of repairs. He also questioned the city's ability to secure the area and prevent future problems there. City officials did not provide an immediate public response to the requests. In a social media post earlier this week, Collins said that the LA site will reopen as soon as it's safe to do so. Appointments at the facility have been rescheduled or shifted to telehealth. Trump's military deployments to the city are currently being contested in the courts, with conflicting rulings so far over his ability to override the wishes of Newsom. And that's LA unrest cancels more than 600 appointments at city's VA clinic. Our next article is from Stripes.com, the official website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper, by Linda F. Hershey from the 12th of June. Fear of reprisal contributes to scourge of military sexual trauma, veterans groups warn. Washington. The nation's leading veterans service organizations urge Congress to adopt a bill that would give survivors of military sexual assault and sexual harassment greater access to health care services and benefits at the Department of Veterans Affairs. Veterans of foreign wars, Vietnam Veterans of America, and disabled American veterans were among the advocacy groups Thursday, demanding swift passage on the Service Members and Veterans Empowerment Act introduced in April in the House and Senate. Sexual assaults and sexual harassment are an underreported scourge in the armed services. Christina Keenan, VFW's National Legislative Service Director, said at a news conference held at the organization's Washington office. Fear of retaliation, peer pressure, and trauma contribute to underreporting, she said. The Defense Department's Sexual Assault Prevention and Response Office also states sexual assault in the military occurs more often than is reported to authorities. But the legislation would ease the VA disability claims process and expand health care for veterans who developed medical conditions connected to military sexual trauma, also known as MST, according to veterans groups and lawmakers. The bill would also extend health care services and benefits to veterans who have experienced online sexual harassment and bullying from deep fakes, artificial intelligence threats, and rapid spread of harmful online content, veterans groups said. Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, the top Democrat on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee and the bill's sponsor in the Senate, was the only lawmaker to speak during a 30-minute news conference. The simple fact that a survivor or victim of sexual assault or harassment and who experiences lasting trauma and disability as a result should not be denied benefits or compensation. That's the basic principle of this bill, he said. Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican of Alaska, is the only Republican senator to co-sponsor the bill so far. Survivors of military sexual trauma need access to resources to help them begin to heal, and this legislation ensures access to those benefits, she said in a written statement that was read at the news conference. A companion bill in the House was introduced in April by Representative Shelley Pingiri, Democrat of Maine, with several Democrat members of Congress signing up to support it. Veterans advocates said the bill's passage is critical to ensuring survivors of sexual military trauma get the assistance that they need. 1 in 3 female veterans report having experienced military sexual trauma during their service, according to the VA. The rate is 1 in 50 for male veterans, but representatives from veterans groups said Thursday that they believe the numbers are higher. Nancy Springer, associate director at VFW, said there is not a quick solution to ending sexual harassment and sexual assault in the military, but we can actively take steps to help veteran survivors of MST access the benefits and health care services that they need, she said. Veterans filing VA claims connected to military sexual trauma might be eligible for mental health care and disability compensation. Serving one's country should never come at the cost of personal safety, said Elaine Howell, legislative assistant at Vietnam Veterans of America. The bill would also require the VA to consider documentation outside the Defense Department when reviewing claims submitted for military sexual trauma, such as medical records from private doctors, police reports from civilian agencies, and statements from family, friends, and clergy. Though the VA already considers that evidence when reviewing claims for military sexual trauma, the bill codifies those practices and policies, the veterans groups said. That's fear of reprisal contributes to scourge of military sexual trauma, veterans groups warn. Linda Hershey of Stars and Stripes also writes this article from the 11th of June. Lawmakers hear a dozen bills to improve basic veterans' benefits for education, home loans, and job training. Washington. Easing some of the challenges that service members encounter as they seek advanced education, home loans, and job training after military service were addressed in a series of bills presented at a House hearing on economic opportunities for veterans. Representative Derek Van Orden, Republican of Wisconsin, chairman of the Economic Opportunity Subpanel for the House Veterans Affairs Committee, emphasized at the start of a two-hour hearing Wednesday the importance for lawmakers to understand how well the Mandatory Transition Assistance Program is preparing service members for civilian life. Run by the Defense Department, TAP, the Transition Assistance Program, is required classroom education for service members in their final months of military duty. TAP offers information for understanding benefits and services offered through the Department of Veterans Affairs. VA Secretary Doug Collins and Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth signed an agreement in late May to partner and collaborate more on providing a continuum of support for troops as they leave the military. But the purpose of the hearing was to discuss legislation for improving delivery of some key VA benefits to service members after they leave the military. The dozen bills presented focused on VA benefit programs for tuition, job training, and home loans. Among the bills were efforts to increase monthly housing assistance for veterans enrolled in online colleges and establish a database to help disabled veterans in their search to buy adaptive homes. This is a simple, common-sense solution, said Kimberly King Hines, Republican delegate from the Northern Mariana Islands, an at-large congressional district. King Hines referred to the Holmes Act, which she leads with Van Orden. The bill would provide financial counseling for any veteran buying a house, but also create a centralized online list of homes for sale that have been specially adapted for people in wheelchairs and with severe disabilities. Van Orden also expressed his appreciation to the Defense Department for sending a representative to the hearing to discuss recent changes for improving TAP and better coordinating support with VA for transitioning service members. Liz Clark, acting director of the Defense Support Services Center at DoD, discussed efforts to enhance the TAP program and partner with the VA to provide a common level of support for the roughly 200,000 service members who leave the military each year. TAP is markedly different and exponentially more effective than the program of 10, 5, or even 3 years ago, she said. Veterans have complained TAP provides a large amount of information, often without context. They've asked for more one-on-one counseling and classroom courses tailored to specific needs. Van Orden said certain military branches are doing TAP better than others. Service members leaving these successful branches will show others the value of military service. They're the best tool we have for recruitment, he said. Van Orden discussed his legislation called the Enhancing the Transitioning Service Members Experience Act. The bill would require data to be collected on veterans' experiences with TAP. We need to have a better understanding of how we are preparing our military members and their families for civilian life, he said. Another bill led by Van Orden, called the Refinancing Relief for Veterans Act, would reduce the fee for veterans using an interest rate reduction refinance loan, or IRRRL. Offered by the VA, the loan allows veterans and service members to refinance their VA-backed mortgages to a lower interest rate, which can potentially lower monthly payments and reduce total loan cost. Lawmakers also heard about plans to reintroduce the Expanding Access for Online Veterans Students Act, which did not advance in 2023. The bill would increase the housing allowance for veterans who pursue education through online learning. The new legislation, which is still in draft form, would seek to eliminate the disparity in benefits provided to in-person and online students. Representative Abe Hamada, Republican of Arizona, discussed the Edith Norse Rogers STEM Scholarship Opportunity Act, which would modify some of the eligibility requirements to be considered for the scholarship. The scholarship provides educational assistance to veterans pursuing degrees in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The legislation would remove the requirement that veterans must be close to exhausting benefits from their post-9/11 GI Bill or Fry Scholarship before applying. Habida said 3,500 veterans have benefited from the scholarship in the 3 years that it's been offered. We need more homegrown talent ready to fill these roles, said Habida, a former Army intelligence officer. As a veteran, I know how important opportunities like those provided in this program are to the men and women who have sacrificed so much for our nation. And that's lawmakers here. A dozen bills to improve basic veterans' benefits for education, home loans, and job training. Our next article is from MilitaryTimes.com by Sebastian Springer and Stephen Losey. Boeing Air Force One work continues amid furor over Qatar plane. Paris. A top Boeing official said the company is proceeding with work on a contract to build 2 new Air Force One jets amid a pending deal by President Donald Trump to accept a donated jet for the mission from Qatar. Stephen Parker, Boeing's interim president and chief executive officer, told reporters at the Paris Air Show there had been no impact at all on the firm's assignment of transforming a pair of 747-8 aircraft into VC-25B Air Force One planes. At a press conference, Barker largely managed to sidestep the hot potato that is the controversial Qatari gift to Trump, saying Boeing was instead laser-focused on achieving the requisite safety and other certifications of the two aircraft for which the company is on the hook. Trump's surprise focus on using a Qatari-donated jet for the presidential transport aircraft has sparked multiple controversies, including concerns about the feasibility of quickly adapting it for presidential use, its cost, and the possible impropriety of accepting such a gift. Boeing's been working on the VC-25B program for about a decade, but the planes have repeatedly fallen behind schedule amid supply chain issues and a lack of properly cleared workers. They were originally expected for delivery in 2024, but now are not expected to be done until 2029 or earlier if the Air Force scales back on the program's requirements. Trump has repeatedly voiced his displeasure with Boeing's delays. A number of details about the status and terms of the gift from Qatar and how the plane would be adapted remain unknown. The Pentagon on May 21st announced that it had accepted the aircraft, but a week later the Washington Post reported the agreement for the transfer had not yet been finalized. A contentious exchange over the Qatar plane developed between Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and Senator Jack Reed, Democrat of Rhode Island, during June 11th Senate Appropriations Subcommittee hearing. Hegseth first said he could not provide specifics about a potential Air Force One in the public hearing before acknowledging a memorandum of understanding with Qatar over the jet had not yet been signed. Also unanswered at the Paris Air Show were questions regarding a potential role for Boeing in refitting the Qatari 747, a plane fashioned to be a flying palace rather than the airborne command and control center that Air Force One is supposed to be. "We'll support the president in any way," Parker said. L3 Harris may have a role in adapting the Qatari plane, according to a Wall Street Journal report in May. L3 Harris has declined to comment. The Air Force on May the 21st, following the Pentagon's premature announcement of the acceptance of the Qatari plane, said it was preparing to award a contract to convert the 747-8 into an Air Force One. Multiple Democrat lawmakers have voiced their displeasure to Hegseth over his refusal to detail the matters such as cost and timing of the modification work. And some lawmakers, including Senator Chris Murphy, Democrat of Connecticut, have also blasted Trump's plans to transfer the jet to his presidential library toward the end of his administration, saying it would be a waste of money to so heavily modify an aircraft that would only be used for a limited time. Some experts have warned adapting a jet from Qatar, even a free one, into Air Force One would cost at least $1 billion to add self-defense capabilities and countermeasures, encrypted communication, and command and control capabilities that would allow the president to direct U.S. forces in a catastrophic emergency. In a June 5th hearing, Air Force Secretary Troy Menk estimated it would cost less than $400 million. That's Boeing Air Force One. Work continues amid furor over Qatar plane. We return to Stripes.com for this article by Linda Hershey. Thousands of medically retired veterans qualify for retroactive combat disability pay after Supreme Court ruling. This article is from the 17th of June, Washington. Thousands of medically retired veterans are eligible for additional retroactive combat disability pay following a Supreme Court decision that ends a cap on compensation for individuals with less than 20 years of service. The court unanimously ruled in favor of Marine Corps veteran Simon Soto, who filed a class action lawsuit arguing the federal government incorrectly reduced the combat-related special compensation that he received after military service. Under federal law, retired veterans waive a portion of their military retirement pay to receive disability benefits from the Department of Veterans Affairs. But veterans receiving combat-related disability pay are an exception under a statute that Congress passed in 2008, according to the Supreme Court decision issued June the 12th. Justice Clarence Thomas, writing for the court, stated, where, as here, the statutory scheme involves a small group of particularly deserving claimants, it is not extraordinary to think that Congress wished to forego a limitations period. The National Veterans Legal Services Program, a nonprofit firm that represented Soto, estimated the court decision could affect up to 9,000 combat disabled veterans. Soto's case had been pending before the Supreme Court since last fall. The court heard oral arguments in April. Soto, a former corporal who is 100% disabled, had served from 2000 to 2006 with two deployments to Iraq before he was medically retired. Soto worked in mortuary affairs while on active duty. His job was to search for and recover U.S. war casualties, according to court documents. He struggled to adjust to civilian life following deployment and eventually received a diagnosis for post-traumatic stress disorder, according to court documents. PTSD is a mental health condition that can develop from witnessing terrifying events. Soto filed for combat-related disability compensation in 2016. The payment is non-taxable and retirees must apply to their service branch to receive it, according to the Defense Finance and Accounting Service at the Defense Department. The Navy had granted Soto combat-related special compensation, but incorrectly applied a 6-year statute of limitation to calculate retroactive payments, giving him compensation back to 2010, according to the decision. The Navy cited a federal law called the Baring Act. Soto's pay was backdated to July 2010 based on the Baring Act, which requires veterans to file compensation claims within 6 years of receiving a VA disability rating, according to court documents. But the Supreme Court ruled there is no 6-year cap. Under a statute adopted by Congress in 2008, a retired veteran who establishes that his disability is attributable to a combat-related injury may receive special compensation up to the amount of waived retired pay, according to the court's decision. The Supreme Court stated the Baring Act establishes default settlement procedures for claims against the government and subjects most claims to a 6-year limitations period. However, the Act includes an exception. If another law confers authority to settle a claim against the government, that law displaces the Baring Act's settlement mechanism, including its limitations period. We're grateful that the Supreme Court recognized that Congress intended veterans to receive the full amount of their combat-related special compensation, no matter when they seek it, said Paul Wright, director of the National Veterans Legal Services Program. Sidley Austin, a private law firm headquartered in Chicago and the National Veterans Legal Services Program, filed a lawsuit in federal court in 2017 on behalf of Soto and similar veterans denied more than 6 years of retroactive combat disability pay. The court's ruling ensures that combat disabled veterans will receive all the combat-related special compensation they are entitled to by law, said Tacy Flint, an attorney with Sidley Austin. In 2021, a district court in Texas ordered the government to pay all military retirees whose combat-related compensation had been limited. But a circuit court later reversed the ruling on appeal, prompting Soto's attorneys to file a petition in 2024 with the Supreme Court. Because of this decision by the Supreme Court, thousands of combat-disabled veterans will finally receive the full amount of the compensation they earned through their service, Wright said. And that's thousands of medically retired veterans qualify for retroactive combat disability pay after Supreme Court ruling. Back to Military Times for this headline. Hegseth says Army base renamings will move ahead despite concerns. This is by Leo Shane III from the 18th of June. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said military officials are looking for ways to honor the individuals whose names are being removed from Army bases as they return to their old designations, but rejected the idea of slowing or stopping the renaming process. The orders will soon be going to those bases to change back to the original names that never should have been changed, he told members of the Senate Armed Services Committee on Wednesday. Veterans and service members across the country who have deployed from Fort Bragg or Fort Bend or Fort Hood or Fort Pickett, there's a legacy. There's a connection to those bases and to those places, to what they trained for there and what they did when they came home. That matters to them. Last week, President Donald Trump announced plans to revert the designations of 7 Army installations previously named for Confederate soldiers. He previously ordered the renaming of North Carolina's Fort Liberty to its old name, Fort Bragg, in February. Despite the presidential announcement last week, several of the changed base names were mentioned during the Army's 250th anniversary parade in Washington, D.C. last weekend because renaming ceremonies have not yet taken place. Service officials have emphasized that the reverted names will no longer commemorate their original Confederate namesakes, but instead other Army alumni with similar names. For example, Fort Hood in Texas, originally named for Confederate General John Bell Hood, will now instead honor Distinguished Service Cross recipient Colonel Robert B. Hood, who served during World War I. The moves undo decisions by Congress and President Joe Biden's administration to remove any connection to the Confederacy from current military bases. Lawmakers approved base name changes as part of the annual Defense Authorization Bill process, noting the divisive nature of the association with the Confederacy. But Trump and Hegseth on Wednesday have argued that the names are sacred to troops and their families, and returning to the better-known names will boost military morale. Democrats on the panel rejected that argument. I don't understand what the motivation is to rename bases for people who took arms against their country on behalf of slavery, said Senator Angus King, independent of Maine. What possible motivation can there be for this? Several lawmakers suggested the move was an insult to the individuals for whom the bases were renamed, a group that includes Medal of Honor recipients and military trailblazers. Hegseth insisted the decision is not a reflection of their contributions and service. We'll find ways to recognize them, he said, without providing further specifics. Army officials are expected to hold formal renaming ceremonies for the affected bases later this year. That's Hegseth says Army base renamings will move ahead despite concerns. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org. Or you can listen on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store or your Google Play Store to get a download for your Android phone or tablet. In addition, you can always listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot or Echo. Let's turn now to the American Legion magazine for May for this article by Lance Fraser. The Worldwide Doctor's Office. The pandemic boosted the use of telemedicine, but remote care still has tech and privacy challenges. Until COVID-19, telemedicine was relatively limited in scope and use among health providers and patients. The pandemic accelerated its adoption and integration into healthcare systems worldwide. Today, telemedicine is widely recognized as a vital tool for improving access to care, reducing costs, and enhancing patient outcomes. But like all tools, users should know how to get the most from remote care. When evaluating telemedicine options, your first priority is to verify the qualifications of the healthcare providers. Review their profiles to ensure they're licensed, board certified, and have relevant experience. Read reviews on social media or third-party platforms to gain a balanced perspective. Before you sign in for your appointment, make sure you have any necessary devices and internet connectivity. The digital platform or website should coordinate with your primary care provider and accept your insurance. According to Dr. Sumantra Sarkar, a behavioral information systems researcher at Binghamton University, coverage for telemedicine varies. While many providers, including Medicaid and some private insurers, have expanded such services, policies differ by state and insurer. Be sure you know and understand the fees involved. You'll want to examine the platform beforehand to ensure it offers essential communication features such as live chat, voice calls, and video conferencing, and to verify that it is licensed and/or accredited by reputable regulatory bodies such as the American Telemedicine Association. Also, it's critical to ensure that your data is properly stored, accessed, and processed. Look for robust encryption methods such as HTTPS or SSL/TLS, and review the privacy policy for compliance with regulations such as HIPAA, the U.S., or GDPR for the EU. Confirm that your data will not be shared with third parties without your consent. Then evaluate the platform's ease of use and accessibility features. Finally, as the appointment nears, have any necessary health information at hand, including a list of current treatments, including dosage and frequency, medical history, allergies to medications, foods, and other substances, symptoms and concerns, pharmacy name and address, and recent injuries or illnesses. Our author, Lance Frazier, is a California-based freelance writer specializing in health, medicine, science, nature, and the environment. That article, The Worldwide Doctor's Office. Now we turn to military.com for this article. VA changes discrimination policy for healthcare staff, denies doctors could withhold treatment. This is from the 18th of June by military.com writer Patricia Keim. The Department of Veterans Affairs changed the bylaws on discrimination for its doctors and other healthcare staff, but has denied a report that it could allow providers to deny care to some patients. An internal VA email sent to medical staff April 30th said, "The guidelines prohibiting discrimination against patients and staff would be changed." The Guardian newspaper reported the change in the bylaws could allow individual health care providers to deny care to Democrats and unmarried veterans, sparking a public denial and drawing criticism from VA Secretary Doug Collins. According to the department email, which was viewed by military.com, the original language prohibited discriminating on the basis of race, age, color, sex, religion, national origin, politics, marital status or disability in any employment matter, or in providing benefits under any law administered by the VA. The portion was changed to not discriminating on the basis of any legally protected status, including legally protected status such as race, color, religion, sex, or prior protected activity in any employment matter or in providing benefits under any law administered by the VA. The parts that were removed included specific references to age, national origin, politics, marital status, and disability, replacing them with a prohibition on discrimination against any legally protected class. A VA spokeswoman said the alteration was made to comply with White House executive orders, including one signed January 20th by President Donald Trump, that said the federal government would only recognize two sexes, male and female. It effectively ordered the federal government to stop recognizing the status of transgender people. These updates will have no impact whatsoever on who VA treats or who works at VA, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs Macaulay Porter told Military.com in an email Monday. In at least one instance, the VA has stopped providing care to veterans to comply with White House orders. It announced in March it would no longer provide hormone therapy and other gender-related care to new transgender patients, but would continue to treat veterans who were receiving such care when the new policy was issued. The Guardian newspaper first reported the change, citing named sources, saying the alteration could provide opportunity for doctors to refuse to treat veterans based on their reasons for care, political affiliation, or personal behavior. The newspaper reported that individuals at the VA could refuse care based on patients' characteristics not explicitly prohibited by federal law. The individuals also said that the changes could affect hiring and promotions at the VA. They seem to open the door to discrimination on the basis of anything that's not legally protected, Dr. Kenneth Kaiser, the VA's top healthcare official during the Clinton administration, told the publication. Porter called the allegations false and said the VA must follow federal law when it comes to hiring employees and treating patients, citing the relevant laws and directives. All eligible veterans will always be welcome at the VA and will always receive the benefits and services they've earned under the law, Porter said. Under federal law, applicants and employees are protected from discrimination based on race, color, religion, sex, national origin, age, disability, and genetic information, according to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. Patients are protected on the basis of race, color, national origin, sex, age, or disability, according to the Department of Health and Human Services. The Guardian article and bylaws change drew widespread response from congressional Democrats, veterans advocates, and former service members nearly as soon as it was published. Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington, a member of the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, called the change appalling and un-American. Service members defend our country in uniform, whether they're Democrat or Republican, married or unmarried. They've already proven they're worthy of VA care. They shouldn't have to fight again when they're home to get benefits they have earned, Murray said in a news release Monday. Marine Corps veteran Kylianne Hunter, CEO of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, told the Hill newspaper that her organization was studying the change because the VA historically has been very expansive in its anti-discrimination policies beyond the federally protected classes. We're trying right now to really gather the information we can to see how widespread the changes of bylaws might actually be, as well as to engage and understand how it's actually impacting our veterans, Hunter told The Hill. The American Medical Association's Code of Medical Ethics states that physicians have an ethical obligation not to discriminate against a prospective patient on the basis of race, gender, sexual orientation, or gender identity, or other personal or social characteristics that are not clinically relevant to the individual's care. The group recently raised concerns, however, about the bylaws change because it did not receive a vote from VA providers, a fiat that raises questions over the autonomy of a self-governing staff. Our American Medical Association reaffirms its commitment to medical staff self-governance and urges all healthcare institutions, including the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, to ensure that any amendments to medical staff bylaws are subject to approval by the medical staff in accordance with Joint Commission standards, the AMA's House of Delegates wrote last month. Our AMA opposes any administrative action that bypass the organized medical staff's voting authority in revising medical staff bylaws, the members added. Porter said the VA clinical leaders worked with the Joint Commission, a nonprofit organization that accredits and certifies hospitals and healthcare programs, to craft the changes. Collins said on the social media platform X Monday that the Guardian story was not only false, it was ridiculous. A day later, he added that the Guardian was conducting an internal investigation into its fabricated VA story, a piece so recklessly false and unbelievable that even the reporter who wrote it can't defend it. Matt Mittenhall, head of communications for the Guardian, said the publication did not plan a retraction, but added that the story may be updated. While we have no plans to retract the story, which highlights the VA's removal of politics and marital status from a list of protections against discrimination within its bylaws, we're considering an additional context provided by the VA after publication, Mittendahl said. And that's VA changes discrimination policy for healthcare staff, denies doctors could withhold treatment. Well, let's turn now to some news from the Veterans Administration, and in this case, specifically the Phoenix VA healthcare system and their newsletter. And there's a couple of announcements from that newsletter that I'm going to pass on to you. TBI Polytrauma, now located in Ruby Clinic. That's formerly known as the Eye Clinic. The polytrauma / TBI team is now located in the Ruby Clinic on the second level of Ambulatory Care Center, the ACC, previously known as the Eye Clinic. This move is part of our ongoing efforts to enhance our services and provide improved care to our veterans. The Ruby Clinic, with its updated facilities, will offer a more convenient and comfortable environment for our patients. With our team now in close proximity, we hope to deliver even better care as we're able to work more efficiently and collaboratively as a team. We look forward to continuing to deliver high-quality, comprehensive care in our new location. Now, for further information or to schedule an appointment, please contact our team at 602-277-5551, extension 5429, or 1477. And thank you for your understanding and continued support. Then we have the Ready, Set, Go. This is the Arizona Wildfire Evacuation Checklist, what to do and take before leaving your home. Wildfire evacuations may be issued suddenly as fires spread across the state. Because of the unpredictable nature of the massive blazes, you may not have much time to ready your home and family after an evacuation order is issued. Once the wildfire is near, your time to get ready is practically gone. This is why it's essential to be prepared well in advance with a plan and go bags should you have to leave. If evacuation is immediate, turn off gas and electricity, unplug or turn off all appliances except your refrigerator and freezers, lock doors and windows, tie a white towel or large white cloth to the front doorknob. This advises rescuers and security of your evacuation. And you can learn more about this at ein.az.gov, ein.az.gov/ready-set-go. If you have any questions or concerns, you can contact VHAPHO Emergency Management. That's all one word, VHAPHO Emergency Management at va.gov. Next, suicide prevention, Veterans Crisis Line. No matter what you're facing, the Veterans Crisis Line is here for all veterans. You know, a lot of folks think that when veterans hang up the uniform, life just picks up right where they left off. But the truth is not that simple. One day you're in a tight-knit crew with solid routine and a clear purpose, and the next thing you know, you're out. Everything's quiet. Maybe too quiet. It's in these moments, the quiet ones, when we're alone, when some might feel isolated, lacking purpose, finding it hard to move forward. That's why suicide prevention matters and what the Veterans Crisis Line is for. It's here to remind veterans, active duty service members, National Guard, reservists, friends, and their families that someone's always listening. No judgment, just help. So what is the Veterans Crisis Line? The Veterans Crisis Line offers free, confidential support, 24/7 by phone, chat, or text. A real person will answer and help, no matter what you're experiencing. You don't have to give your name or address or any identifying information. Veterans, I want you to know you're in charge of the conversation. You share what you want to share. Responders can work with you to find helpful resources or refer you to other services that match your situation. And it's up to you whether to use them. Follow-up support with a VA Suicide Prevention Coordinator, SPC, is also available. And that Veterans Crisis Line can be found at 988, then press 1. Chat online at veteranscrisisline.net. That's all one word, veteranscrisisline.net/chat. Or you can text 838-255. Remember, it's confidential. You decide how much information to share. It's free, and VA enrollment isn't required. It's for all veterans. That's Suicide Prevention Veterans Crisis Line. Next from that newsletter, Start Your Job Search Today, Bridge My Return, provides veterans, military community, faster job matches. The sharing of any non-VA information does not constitute an endorsement of products and services on the part of VA. Veterans should verify the information with the organization offering. Bridge My Return, BMR, has simplified the job search and hiring process for the military community, for the job seeker, and the talent seeker. By leveraging AI and a proprietary algorithm, military job seekers are matched to specific live jobs that fit with them, with employers who get them, because they've all been vetted for their military readiness. An MOS translator captures their military skills. The software translates military skills into civilian skills, and proprietary algorithm matches veterans to jobs. What's required of a job seeker? A completed BMR profile, a 20-minute investment. From there, the software works 24/7. Members see new matches as new employers and jobs are added to the platform. The application also automatically produces a professional resume from the completed profile, and candidates can apply to a matched job that interests them with a single click, all at no cost. For employers, the software delivers quality matches instantly. The user experience and interface provide for the automation of job importation, a sleek dashboard to manage activities, applicant tracking system integration, and a standardized candidate resume. It's no longer enough to call veterans heroes. It's time to look at them as assets. It's no longer enough to thank them for their service. It's time to hire them for their talents. It's time for a tech-first, user-centric approach that tackles veteran unemployment. Members of the military community, including spouses and caregivers, can get started today by going to www.bridgemyreturn, and that's all one word, bridgemyreturn.com. Then we have digital solutions for veterans with limb loss, designing sockets to fit like a glove. This is also available on news.va.gov, but it's reported in the Veterans News Now newsletter from Phoenix. Retired Air Force Staff Sergeant Bill Stewart didn't expect to deal with limb loss. For years, he lived with pain from a lump on his foot, brushing it off as just another scar from his time in service. But when he finally sought help, doctors diagnosed him with cancer. 2 days later, they amputated his foot and ankle, and he joined the ranks of about 10,000 veterans who face limb loss each year. Decades later, Stewart's now receiving care at VA's community-based outpatient clinic in Eugene, Oregon. There, he became the first veteran to receive a VA-designed and produced 3D-printed transtibial socket, thanks to a new fully digital workflow developed by VA. A common cause of pain for people using a prosthetic leg is a poorly fitting socket, the part that connects directly to the residual limb. If the socket doesn't fit well, it can lead to pain, skin sores, swelling, and even nerve damage. VA has long been a leader in caring for veterans with limb loss. VA prosthetists work closely with each patient to ensure the best possible fit, but getting it right's difficult. Over time, the shape of the limb can change due to muscle loss or weight changes, making the socket harder to fit manually. The patient is part of the process. To help Stewart, his VA team tried something new, a fully digital approach, designing and manufacturing his prosthetic limb. The process began the traditional way by listening to the patient. Understanding Stewart's daily activities, preferences, and comfort needs helped the team shape the final design. They scanned his limb and used the data to create a digital model that served as a blueprint for a custom-fit socket. They made a 3D-printed check socket to test the shape and confirm it was accurate before they produced the final version. The first version wasn't perfect, but because Stewart was part of the process, he was able to give feedback that helped the team make adjustments. By the third version, he said it was good to go, a solid balance of comfort, performance, and personal fit. As part of the digital workflow, every step of the process was captured digitally. That means better records for Stuart's future care. And the lessons the team learned in creating his limb can lead to smarter systems, better efficiency, and improved care for thousands of other veterans. It makes me feel great that the VA is on top of technology and wanting to improve the lives of veterans, said Stuart. I think it's wonderful. And that's Digital Solutions for Veterans with Limb Loss. Then, in the newsletter, they announced the First Friday Dementia Series. It presents Dementia Friends Information Session. VA care partners, providers, and community partners. And it will be on the 11th of July, 2025, from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. Online at bit.ly/3fsjlbk or by phone at 404-397-1596, code 2762-187-4023, and the password is phxvamdc@22. And I know that those links and phone numbers are kind of hard to catch, but if you go to the Phoenix VA website, you can track this down in their newsletter. The programs of General Caregiver Support Services and COACH present a monthly dementia education series on the first Friday of every month covering coping as a caregiver, ask the experts, tips and tools, and community spotlight. And you can always call 602-277-5551, extension 7393, for more information. Under their miscellaneous tab, they have Seeking Women Veterans for Historical Project Honoring Military Aviators. They say, Dear Veteran and or Veteran Supporter, I'm reaching out on behalf of a collaborative historical initiative that aims to highlight the contributions and experiences of women military aviators connected to Arizona. Her name is Dana Ramsey, and she's a female veteran who recently attended a local networking event where a few representatives of the city of Mesa shared new community initiates and progress of developing programs. I was interested and excited for the potential of finding lost Piolets when I found a piece of history. The city of Mesa, specifically the department responsible for documenting Arizona history, has recently discovered a 1942 photograph at Luke Air Force Base. The image features a class of women pilots who completed their training at Williams Air Base in Mesa Chandler. This rare find has sparked a renewed effort to uncover and preserve the stories of women who've served in aviation roles across generations in Arizona. The city of Mesa is seeking to partner with women veterans to share those important narratives, both the triumphs and challenges. While we recognize that connecting with World War II era women pilots may be difficult, we're deeply interested in speaking with women pilots, aircraft instructors, and aircraft mechanics who served during the Korean War, Vietnam, and more recent conflicts such as Iraq and Afghanistan. We're especially eager to connect with those affiliated with the Phoenix Blackhawks, Luke Air Force Base, or the broader Arizona aviation community. If you or someone you know fits this description and is open to being interviewed, please reach out to Dana, who is assisting with interview coordination and outreach. Your stories are a vital part of our shared history, and we'd be honored to help tell them. If this is you, then you can respond, and they have a whole list of information to respond. Dana Ramsey's email address is dnr24@aol.com. And you can contact Dana Ramsey and provide them with your full name, rank, branch of service, wartime era or conflict, military role or job, years of service, bases or units, best way to contact you, and are you open to an in-person phone or video interview? And if you contact Dana Ramsey and ask her for the information that is required, or send that information if you're able to do that in an email, and she can get back to you and set up an opportunity for an interview. And that's about all we can get from the Phoenix VA Healthcare System newsletter, VA Veterans News Now. We have time for one more article from news.va.gov. How VA is advancing healthcare for women veterans. We are here for you. And this is from the 12th of June from the Office of Women's Health. On June 12, 1948, President Harry S. Truman signed into law the Women's Armed Services Integration Act, which gave women the right to serve as regular permanent members of the armed forces. Today, there are more than 2 million living women veterans across the country, the fastest growing group of veterans dedicated to serving you. VA is doing a lot to meet the needs of women veterans, improving access, expanding services, and investing in specialized care. At every VA center, you'll find the designated women's health providers trained to understand and care for your specific health needs. These providers deliver whole person care that recognizes your experiences both in uniform and beyond. Those services include birth control options, breast health, including breast cancer screening, breastfeeding and lactation support, maternity care coordination, fertility and family building services, menopause management and hormone therapy, gynecologic surgery and cancer screening, military sexual trauma support services, mental health care tailored to women veterans' experiences, and prosthetics designed specifically for women veterans. For a full overview of women's health services, you can visit www.womenshealth.va.gov/womenshealth, one word, womenshealth/overview.asp. If you want help navigating your options, you can call or text the Women's Veterans Call Center at 1-855-VA-WOMEN. That's 855-829-6636. It's free, confidential, and staffed by women, many of whom are veterans themselves. Whether you're calling for yourself or someone you care about, they'll connect you with the right support, including your local Women Veterans Program Manager. Whether you're in a city or rural community, VA is expanding access through digital tools and telehealth, community care options, and the Transition Assistance Program that helps you understand your benefits before you leave active duty. Your benefits go beyond health care. Explore what's available for you, from education and housing assistance to burials and memorials. We see you, we hear you, and we're here for you. That's how VA is advancing health care for women veterans. You've been listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. A lot of links, a lot of phone numbers you may have missed. Well, you can always go back and re-listen by going to sunsounds.org and finding the Weekly Reveille program or any other program you're interested in and replaying it. Additionally, that same ability is available on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, available from the Apple App Store for your iPhone or iPad, or the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And of course, you can always listen to Weekly Reveille at its regularly scheduled time on your Amazon Dot or Echo.